Welcome to Portia Pattern with Bracken Helms, the show where we hear Bracken and his distinguished guests from the Portia community patter on about Porsches and all things automotive. Portia Pattern is sponsored by Circuit 64. Circuit 64 creates authentic automotive apparel made for like-minded automotive enthusiasts. The links for Circuit 64 are in the show notes. Okay, let's get to it.
Terry Kill, part one. I mean, I think you've already picked up on it, the fact that I like to interview people that have kind of been around the block. This is kind of like a Michael Wilhoit thing. Like, maybe this name doesn't sound familiar to you, but, you know, Classic Auto Sales has been around for a long time. And, you know, we're talking cars in a warehouse that aren't just like, well, I got a few cars. I got like three or four Porsches in out on my lot. No, we're talking like inside a warehouse with like 50-100 cars in there. So I figure these people's opinion is valuable because they've been around the cars. I'm always looking for stories from back in the day or good stories that people have. I don't think I got as many stories out of him as I wanted to get because I know he's got some, but I mean, I don't know for a fact, but that's my hunch. I mean, I talked to him on the phone before I set up this interview and he was a little bit hesitant because he didn't want to have to deal with jack-offs. And so, I mean, he told me some of the cars that he has that he's not selling. And yeah, they're pretty cool. He told me he wasn't going to talk about all of them. He told me he may talk about some of them. He wasn't sure yet. So when I hit the record button, it was all about like whatever he wanted to tell me. But yeah, he was definitely, you could tell he's at the end of his career. He's made his money. He's been in the car business. He really doesn't want to deal with just people calling up and bugging him. My favorite part about this one is the tree story. I know it really has nothing to do with cars. I mean, his decisions with the trees kind of led him on a path to where he could buy the cars. But I love how he would overcharge the rig. What do you call them, rich assholes with their spoiled kids? And then, you know, he had at that age, at 14, he had enough empathy to see that this lady was struggling and would sell the trees to them cheaper. Because he knew in his head, I mean, he's a smart guy. He knew in his head, you know, boss is never going to know as long as I bring him his money and I sell him his damn trees. Wonder if he still views the world like this. I don't know. Anyway, so here's part one of Terry Kill. Okay, I guess the first question is, what is Classic Auto Sales?
It's an independent car dealership. I started in 1968.
Okay, and how long have you been in the car business?
56 years.
Why did you get into the car business?
Well, it was kind of by accident. When I was 16, I bought a 67 Corvette convertible from my uncle out in California. Never been there before. I jumped on a plane and flew out to LA, picked me up at the airport, went down to the crab cooker for dinner on Friday night. Saturday took me to Disneyland, went back to his house Saturday night, jumped in the 67 Corvette convertible. Drove it back to Omaha. It was 2,000 miles. I made it back in 20 hours before the interstate. I had to go through downtown Las Vegas. They made you drive through the middle of downtown because there was no interstate back then. So, and the first car I had that I bought when I was 15 was a 64 and a half Olds 442 convertible with a four-speed. I had seven brothers, and my dad took, when first baby was born, my dad took my mom to the Exarban parking lot to teach her how to drive, and she hit a pole. He said, "You're not driving. You're waiting until this kid's old enough to chauffeur you around." So 16 years later, my oldest brother, my dad, bought him a 56 Chevy station wagon, green and white four-door, six-cylinder automatic. We all gagged, bitched about it. The next brother, David, came along. My dad bought him a 59 Chevy station wagon, six-cylinder automatic, which two-door, which was worse. So I was 14 years old. I said, "I'm not driving one of these station wagon because I want a car of my own. I'm not getting a hand-me-down." So I was 14. I walked down to the grocery store, Hinky-Dinky grocery store, about six blocks away before Christmas. Went into the manager and I said, "I need a job." He said, "How old are you?" I said, 16, because you got to be 16. He said, "You know anything about trees?" I said, "Yeah, I go out to Michael's farm all the time." He said, "Okay, it's 25 cents a foot. See what you can do." So I learned how to deal with people at that age. I'd get this rich asshole with six snotty kids coming in. I'd charge him 50 cents a foot. some old lady had come in with a rusted out van and 5-6 kids. I'd charge her 10 cents a foot. He didn't know I was doing it. I sold all the Christmas trees before Christmas. So I come in after Christmas. He goes, "Hey, you know anything about cereal?" I said, "Yeah, I eat it every morning." He said, "Okay, come on. You're in charge of the cereal aisle." Saved my money. Took my dad down to the downtown to Rose Novak. They had a 64 and a half 442 convertible they just traded for. I said, "I want this car." I wasn't even 16 yet. Anyhow, I talked him into buying it for $1,500. My payment was $300 a month, and I paid my own insurance and everything. So that was my first car. And then the second car was the 67 Corvette that I had all summer. So coming into winter, my dad said, "You got too many cars out in the driveway. Get rid of one of them." So I put an ad in the paper on the Corvette because I didn't want to drive in the wintertime. First guy comes along, says, "What do you want for it?" I said, "I don't know. Make me an offer." He said, "I'll give you $2,500. I said, "All right." So I drove it all summer. I made $1,000 on it. It's a pretty good profit for a 16-year-old. So I studied the market because I used to go out to L.A. with my uncle at the dealer auction, and I got the sheets and I could see what was selling for more out there than back here. So I started buying Porsches and late model Cadillacs, and I would drive one of those out there, sell at the auction, make $700-$800. I'd buy a Porsche and drive it back here, you know, make some money on it. And I had like these old Corvettes. I had like 3 or 4 of them in the driveway all the time for sale. When my little brothers turned 16, I bought them all a car. The brother younger than me, I bought him a 71 Olds Cutlass convertible, a black one. Gave it to him. He was 16, didn't have any money. Next brother came along and gave him a 68 Cougar XR7G with a factory sunroof. Was one of a few. Next little brother comes along and bought him a 69 Firebird convertible. And the youngest one, when he was 16, I bought him a 67 red Camaro RSSS convertible. So, I was making good money doing the car stuff, but I was going to school, went to Catholic grade school, went to Creighton Prep Catholic High School, and went to Creighton University, graduated with a degree, and I decided I didn't want to work for anybody after that. So I started a car lot in 1971, and I had all Corvettes and Porsches and muscle cars and stuff, and that's how I started way back then.
What do you like about working in the car business?
Oh, it's a challenge to find the really nice, low mileage, original, rare cars. It's kind of, you know, like treasure hunting and having fun selling it to people that want them. You know, the harder they are to find, the easier they are to sell. Because I had nothing but really special stuff. A lot of muscle cars back in the 70s, Boss 429s, Camaro SSs, Chevelle SSs, fun cars.
How did you get involved with Porsches?
Well, it's kind of by accident. I bought a 64 coupe from a guy here in town. I paid $300 for it. I painted it in my garage and I drove it for one summer and I sold it for $600. And it was a fun car to drive. I thought, wow, this thing drives better than anything else. It rides better. It wasn't that fast, but it was fun to drive. Kind of fell in love with Porsches.
I would say, or I've heard that you're a market maker. Like a lot of people look at a car and, you know, they check, oh, what's it going for? What's NADA say? What does it say online? Where you just kind of knew the price or just kind of.
I tell them I am the book. I'll tell you what the value is because I've had so many one owner, low mileage documented cars. The book is just an average guide, but it doesn't tell the real story. You know, the nicer the car is, the more original, the rarer, the more money it's worth. So I kind of determine that myself.
There's sometimes where you just had to have a car if it was the right car, and you were sometimes extended, even though you had like 100 cars there, you may not have extra money in the bank to, so you'd have to kind of move some around, but you weren't about to lose a good car, even if you had to pay
for it. I've been on the edge my whole life. I sell 4 and buy 5. It's just the way it's been. When I find something I want, I get it.
You're a big of a risk taker gambler. He told me that your dad called you Hawk Nut.
No, that's what Billy named me that.
Oh, okay. Would you say you're a better buyer or a better seller?
Probably more fun buying. You know, it's more challenging. The selling part of it used to be a lot easier, but it's not right now. It's not much fun.
Oh, that was
markets changed. You know, I know what I got. I know the cars I got. I know what they're worth. So these young kids, you know, the old guys would just buy it if they wanted it. But these young kids, you know, they got to talk to the bank. They got to talk to the credit union. They can't get the money because They think I want too much. I don't want too much because I know what they're worth. I'm kind of stubborn that way.
I'm part of like a Facebook, a private Facebook page, and people are just on there nonstop. And I'm sure some of them know what they're talking about, but a lot of people are just throwing out prices. And I'm just like, how long have you been doing this?
I tried that once and I got discouraged. I mean, I think, I don't know if I can say jackoffs, but there's too many of them on that site that don't know what they're doing. There's too many scams and stuff. So I don't do that. Listen to this. I started advertising in magazines and newspapers back in the 80s before the internet. I started a magazine called Deals on Wheels. These two brothers in South Dakota had this little black 15-page cheap paper magazine they were trying to develop. They came down to me and they did it for me for free. But I said, you got to put color on the cover. So I got them to do that. And then I got them to do color inside. They sold it to Auto Trader years later for big money. They had a non-compete agreement with them. 5 years later, Auto Trader kept trying to raise the price, and I told them, forget it. So we started another magazine called, it was originally Deals and Wheels, and then we changed it to Auto Buy, which I still advertise in. I used to do it in newspapers all over the country. I put an ad in newspapers or magazines, Hemmings, you know, that's how I was selling them back in the 80s and 90s till the internet started. And I had these two guys from Sioux Falls, Sioux City came down, wanted to buy this 85 911 coupe. I had a black one, two brothers. I said, how are you going to pay for it? They came down twice. They said, okay, you guys are done driving. What are you going to do? Can you get us financed? I said, well, fill these credit apps out. I'll try it. They left. I sent them to the bank. Bank called me up and said, no, they don't have any credit. We're not doing it. I called the brothers up. I go, you guys don't have any credit. What are you doing? They said, well, we just quit college and we're building computers in my dad's garage at home. I go, what? This is 1985. I go, go get a job, get an income, you know, so you can buy something. They go, no, it's going to work. Well, ended up being Norm and Ted Waite, Gateway 2000 Computer Company, which was a big deal back in then. Fast forward, I sold them both a lot of Ferraris and Porsches and over the years. And then several years ago, Ted sold the company for $4.1 billion. And I remember one time he bought a new Ferrari for me and I shipped it down to Scottsdale and I flew down there to deliver it to him. I drove up to the gate at the Scottsdale private airport and the gal says, who are you? And I told her, I'm here to see Ted Waite. She goes, okay. She opened the gate. She said, just drive out on the runways. So I did. I'm standing there waiting. Here comes this brand new Gulfstream 5 lands. And it's not the kind of plane where you got to flip the door open and walk out. It's the kind of plane you got to push the steps up to it. He comes walking out with a ponytail and ripped up jeans and stuff. He goes, look at my new jet. I just got it. It was $45 million. I go, well, I guess you made it, didn't you? And so anyhow, he bought it and I flew home. He bought a bunch of cars from me over the years.
Yeah, he did okay. Yeah. So another thing I was going to ask you is what you were kind of getting into is it was exciting back in the day. It's not as exciting as it is now.
Now it's tough. There are too many guys doing it. I was doing it when nobody was, you know, because I always had the coolest cars. I mean, I could tell you about it. I bet I've had 11,000, 12,000 cars in 56 years, and they're all really cool stuff. I mean, the old Porsches, you want me to tell you a couple of stories about the old cars I had?
Sure.
How about a 57 Ferrari Testarossa, one of 12? It was chained to a guy's tree, and the guy was a mailman in L.A. It was chained to a tree in his backyard. Bought it for $1 million, had it restored. 10 years later, I decided to sell it. Sold to a Japanese guy for $8 million. Now the car is worth $50 million. The last Corvette I brought back from California was a 67 L88 Coupe. They only made 15 of them. I had my little car lot. I was living in an apartment. I had the car in the apartment garage. Wintertime, had to pay bills. I sold that car for $3,000. So a few years ago, I'm out visiting my daughters in Seattle at the Mecum auction. And the same Corvette goes through the auction. What do you think it sold for?
I have no idea.
$3.4 million. God, that's one I should have kept. Anyhow, 54 Speedster I sold for $20,000 back in the old days. I had a lot of one-off Porsches. The 87 slant nose turbo that the Porsche built special for Martina Navratilova that won all those big golf or tennis tournaments.
Yeah.
And Andre Agassi, I had a 91 slant nose turbo. They only made one. Those are cars I should have kept, but I couldn't afford it back then.
Yeah, my dad said that, you know, he would just sell the cars to you because, I mean, you would pay good money, knowing that you would get even more out later. Whereas a lot of these places that he was going to where he was either going to retail them or their wholesale was going to be too little and wasn't worth his time.
I always bought the nicest cars and I paid the going price, but I always made money on them because I had the best stuff of anybody. I still do.
Okay. How did your business or how has your business changed or evolved?
Well, there's more guys doing what I started doing. I mean, there's too many dealers, too many guys don't know what they're doing. There's more cars. It's kind of not as fun as it used to be in the old days. I love the air-cooled Porsches. 98 was the last year they made them. And then they started building water-cooled cars. You know, the Boxster was the first one in 97. And that was kind of a hit. And then they took a Boxster and turned it into a 911. They turned the motor around and put a back seat in it and called it a 911. It was not a good car. And they still don't bring much money. You know, I'm not a fan of the water-cooled cars. The only ones I liked were the turbos with the Metzger engine in it. You know, those were good cars because the motors were better.
Right.
But I'm not, they kept raising the price of them. I was selling 96 and 7 brand new turbos. I was importing them, selling them for 100, 110 grand. What, a new turbo now is 250, 275. I'm out. I'm not interested.
Do you have any regrets with your career?
Should have quit earlier.
What was the best thing about your career?
Just the challenge of it. You know, it was like finding buried treasure. If I could find the right car and having fun with it and then advertising it and selling it.
And what would you say would be the worst?
Dealing with jack-offs. Can I say that?
Yeah. Yeah, I've had people say worse.
Well, the book value is, I said, I don't care what the book is. Call the book and see if they got one like this, you know? I'm old school.
I deal with that same thing just selling my cars after I'm done with it. Like I sell my wife's car or whatever, and it's like I got people that come by and they're just like, well, I mean, I look at Kelly and Kelly says it's worth $8,000, and I'm like, okay, go look at other cars and come back and tell me you have one that has this mileage and is in this good a condition.
I go through it every day.
And it's not like I'm asking too much. I'm asking what the car is worth. They just like go on these like Kelly and
you know what I tell them? I said, when you go to the restaurant, you probably order a chuck steak, don't you? I don't sell chuck steak. I sell filet. You got to pay a little more money for a filet. You can eat hamburger all your life, but I'm not doing it.
In your opinion, what is the most exciting car you have dealt with?
Oh, God. I've had so many of them, you know. Probably the one that I just sold made money on. You know, I've had a lot of one-off Porsches and a lot of, I had hundreds of vintage Corvettes all through the 60s and 70s. And probably 72 was the last good year for a Corvette until they changed the body style. The 73s all the way up to 96 were not good cars. And they changed the body style. The 98 was a way better car. You know, I've always done Corvettes, but I like the older Corvettes better. The mid-year Corvettes, 63 and 7, I had thousands of them, rare ones.
What cool cars have you owned?
I've had thousands of them. I mean, you name a type of car, and I'll tell you some of them I had. I mean, a lot of vintage Porsches and Mercedes and Corvettes, muscle cars. You know, rare ones.
Favorite car you've ever owned?
I got my own collection, but I'm not going to tell you what it is. I got a lot of one owner, low mileage, documented, really rare cars that I've never tried to sell because I'm not ready yet. I mean, probably got 15 or 20 of them, but I'm not going to tell you what they are because the phone will be ringing off the hook and I don't want to go through that. Nobody knows I got them.
You don't want to be dealing with jackoffs?
No. Well, I'll tell you the one I got that I like the best that's worth a lot of money. I bought it from Dick Barber that used to race for Porsche back in the 70s.
Yeah, I talked to Dick Barber like 2 days ago.
Yeah, well, I got his car. They Porsche built it for him in their wish department. It was the first slant nose Turbo S. It's a red 83 that was in his museum. Well, I've had that car for 20 years and I don't want to sell it.
Any you regret selling?
Oh, yeah. Lots of them. Hundreds, thousands of them. Yeah, I mean, I had some super rare cars that I kept a couple of them. I wouldn't have had to work my whole life, but how do you know? You know, I don't have a crystal ball.
Right. Any regret not buying?
Oh, there's been a few times. I could have bought a 94 flat nose from your dad, a black one.
Oh, I know the car.
Back in the old days, for a hundred grand. Now that car is probably worth a million. But it was expensive. I can buy 10 cars and make more money on it. And I couldn't really afford to keep it back then.
What is the next fun car you see yourself buying?
Oh, God. I don't know. Whatever comes along that I want. You know, something rare. But it's got to be original and documented. I don't buy any pig in the poke cars. You know, I don't try to restore anything. I've got a one-off 77 Carrera 3-liter lightweight. Imported from Germany, and it's one of one. It's silver with a houndstooth interior. It's got power windows, air, and sunroof, which is the only one they made. It's all documented. And, you know, I got some cars like that, but I'm not going to tell you all of them because I don't want the phone ringing off the hook.
Thanks for joining us for today's episode. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, comment, like, and share with your friends. Feel free to send questions or suggestions to the email in the description of the show. Special thanks to our sponsor, Circuit 64. Goodbye for now. We hope we can get together again for our next episode. Now get out there and enjoy the cars and the people.